Good morning, welcome to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldin. And this week we're going to talk about gluten intolerance and celiac disease. My guest is Dr. Thomas O'Brien. He's an internationally recognized speaker and workshop leader specializing in gluten sensitivity and celiac disease. He's a Sherlock Holmes for chronic disease and metabolic disorders. He's a clinician par excellence in treating chronic disease and metabolic disorders from a functional medicine perspective. He holds teaching faculty positions with the Institute for Functional Medicine and the National University of Life Sciences. Good morning, Dr. O'Brien.
Good morning, Ann.
Okay, so let's talk about what's going on. Since the last time we spoke, there's been quite a bit of activity in the field of gluten intolerance and celiac disease.
Yes, there has been. Probably the most well-received discussions have been around differentiating celiac disease and gluten sensitivity. And there now is a common consensus and agreement amongst the world experts. This came out of the International Celiac Symposium in Oslo last June. That conference occurs every 2 years and occurred last June. And they finally agreed that there is such a thing as gluten sensitivity without it manifesting as celiac. And there have been numerous discussions and arguments and frustrations in the last 10 years from doctors in the field, the clinicians who know that there is such a thing, and then the researchers who say that there's no evidence that there is such a thing. If it's not attacking...
Well, we are back. Okay, Dr. O'Brien.
Yes.
Glad to have you back with us. Okay, so continue on. At the conference in Oslo, they acknowledge that you can have a problem with gluten and not have it manifest in your gut.
Yes, and there have been papers on that topic that go back as far as 1998. There have been some researchers who have published individual papers on that concept, but it had not been accepted by the world body of celiac experts until just this last June. And as a result of that, in February of this year, a paper came out asking that we all use the same nomenclature, that now we're in agreement, and that and they asked, this is the way to look at it. If you look at an iceberg, above the iceberg, the ice that you can see above the waterline, that ice, that is gluten-related disorders. That's the big kahuna concept that covers all aspects of an immune reaction to gluten, gluten-related disorders. Below the waterline, if it manifests in the intestines, it's celiac disease, or it may be celiac disease. Mm-hmm. And then they now agree that if it's not celiac disease, then it falls under the category below the waterline of gluten-related disorders as non-celiac gluten sensitivity. So they've acknowledge that there is such a thing as non-celiac gluten sensitivity. It's the first time that there has been consensus on this. They've asked that we use that language and that all scientists, researchers, clinicians, and the general public use the same language so it's not so confusing.
Okay,
for example, there's one more thing, and that is they've asked that we stop using the term gluten intolerance. Just stop using it. Because it's confusing to the general public, they associate it with dairy intolerance, lactose intolerance, where we know that if you take the enzymes, it's okay to eat dairy. And it gives that misconception in the world of gluten sensitivity.
Right. That there's a way around it. There's no way around it.
That's correct. So that consensus statement has come out asking that we use the same nomenclature.
Okay. And review the proper terms again.
The big term that covers all of it is gluten-related disorders.
Okay.
And that's any time the immune system is reacting. It could be an IgE reaction, which would be an official allergy. That's the only type of reaction that actually can be called an allergy, is an IgE reaction, and that they can be dangerous. That is, the extreme is someone can have anaphylactic shock, mm-hmm. like with peanuts or something like that. That's possible with wheat.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be an IgE reaction. It can be celiac disease, which is in the intestines and causes the microvilli to wear down. Or it can be gluten-related disorder. Or it can be non-celiac gluten sensitivity. So it's one of the three. It's either below the waterline. So above the waterline is gluten-related disorders. That's the big term. Below that is going to be an allergy, celiac disease, mm-hmm. or non-celiac gluten sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with that in mind, there are papers that have now come out on a gluten sensitivity, non-celiac gluten sensitivity associated with schizophrenia and with attention deficit and with cerebellar, that's a part of the brain, the part of the brain wearing out, and it causes cerebellar ataxia, with seizures, with MS. So there are papers that show this gluten-related disorder without celiac can be very prevalent in many different conditions.
And pretty devastating.
And pretty devastating. No longer do we have to limit ourselves to the concept that if the intestines are not damaged, it's okay to eat wheat. You just can't say that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We know that's not true, that there can be many, many other causes, many other conditions that manifest as a result of a gluten-related disorder.
Okay, there's a paper that I see the encapsulation of from the European Review of Medical Pharmacological Science from June of 2010. It says the latest numbers as of 2010 were that as many as 1 in 5 people have some form of gluten sensitivity, which is the term that they use.
Correct. That is correct.
1 in 5 that's a boatload.
That's a boatload. Another paper came out recently by Dr. Fasano at the University of Maryland, who is one of the premier celiac researchers. And
mm-hmm.
He has pointed out that we know celiac is about 1 out of 100, somewhere around 1 out of 100 in general, mm-hmm. over the entire population. Now, there's specific subgroups, like if you're a sibling, it can be 1 out of 5. If you're a first-degree relative, it can be 1 out of 8. So there are different groups where it can be very, very common.
Okay, so then if the parent has one of these three problems, then their children are much more likely.
Much more likely.
And if both parents have it, it must go up even more.
That's exactly right. And the critical nature of checking children early when the parents think they're fine, that they haven't gotten sick yet, is that the longer a child has this particular problem of a gluten-related disorder, the more tissue gets damaged, the more inhibition on the growth of the child's body occurs. For example, we know a failure to thrive is very common in celiac disease, and what that means is that children don't thrive. And what does that mean? They're the shortest kids in the class.
Mm-hmm.
Their muscles don't develop. Their bones don't develop the way that their genetics would allow them to if they have this condition. And it's not every one of these children, but it's classic that, and if you check the children, if you look for the shortest kids in the class, the frequency of them being celiac is as frequent as 1 out of 7 of the shortest kids in the class are celiacs. It's so very, very frequent.
And yet, nobody looks at it.
That's exactly right, Ann. But now this world is becoming more and more recognized. More people are hearing about gluten sensitivity. More people are trying the gluten-free diet. It's now a $2.5 billion industry in the U.S.
Well, and you know, it's funny. We go to potlucks, and they're, you know, the gluten-free options, and the people who don't need it are clamoring and taking all the food that those of us who that's all we get to eat want to eat because it's better.
Right, it tastes good. It's healthier for you.
Right, they like the gluten-free bread better. They like the option that it's hilarious. They like the quinoa noodles better than the semolina noodles.
Yes.
So we have these big fights at potlucks now about who gets to eat what, and everything has to be labeled and whatever. Anyway.
Oh, that's funny.
Okay, so, boy. Now, there's one thing. I recently had someone tell me that they had, or that someone in their family had, sprue. And I thought, oh, my God, that's still around? So apparently some doctors are still using that term.
Apparently so. That is not a term that you find in any of the current medical papers, the research papers. It is an old term. Gluten-related enteropathy or celiac sprue. That term came about because the symptom patterns are very typical to tropical sprue. So celiac has been referred to as non-tropical sprue. Mm. And those symptoms are emaciation, diarrhea, loose bowels, they can't absorb any nutrients, they're fatigued, they very little energy. It's a pattern. So it was an old term that was used, and that's not used much. This is the first time I've heard anyone refer to it in a few years.
Well, I hadn't heard it either, and so I thought, oh, but it's certainly not on the list of the currently accepted terms to use. So
that's
means
correct.
All of us providers need to disseminate this information to our patients rather than keep using the outdated terms.
That is correct. And paper that our doctors, I would recommend they read, mm-hmm. is the paper on nomenclature, on looking at what's the common language now that we all should be using. And this mm-hmm. was the 17 world experts on celiac disease who were at the Oslo conference that I mentioned earlier. They got together over the course of... I think it took them 5 months, 5 or 6 months, and they came up with the nomenclature, and celiac sprue is one of those terms that they've asked that we...
Stop using, yes.
Right. the terms that they've asked be discontinued include atypical celiac disease, latent celiac disease, typical celiac disease, gluten intolerance, silent celiac disease, and sprue. So those terms are asked to not be used anymore because they are so confusing for people to relate to.
That's great. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about tests that may help people figure out what they ought to be doing, directions they ought to be going. You're listening to Your Health, and my guest is Dr. Thomas O'Brien. If you have a question for Dr. O'Brien, you can give a call here at 503-325-0010, and we'll be right back. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Your Health. And my guest is Dr. Thomas O'Brien. He is an internationally recognized speaker and workshop leader specializing in gluten sensitivity and celiac disease. Welcome back, Dr. O'Brien.
Thank you.
Okay, so when we left, we were talking about the new names and throwing out the old names. Now let's talk about some new tests, some old tests, and new ways of looking at tests to help us distinguish what we're looking at.
Oh, my goodness. That is the most exciting topic to talk about. I've called it the conundrum of gluten sensitivity in the last few years, that people
right.
will go to their doctor, they get a blood test, the blood test comes back negative, the doctor says it's okay to eat wheat, but they say, but if I don't eat wheat, I feel so much better.
Right.
And the doctor says, oh, well, look, here's the test. No, it's not a problem.
Oh, I have had so many people tell me that.
Yes, well, we know why that is now. There's no question about it. So let me give you a little background information.
Okay.
Celiac disease is when the microvilli, the shags in your intestines, wear down.
Mm-hmm. Old rug.
Right. It's, so for our our listening audience, your intestines are a tube. The tube's about 25 feet long, and the inside of the tube is lined with shag carpeting. And they're called microvilli. And this shag over here is where calcium's absorbed. This other shag, magnesium. These shags, protein. All the shags absorb different vitamins and minerals. Celiac disease is when your shags wear down and you got berber. And if you've got berber, you don't absorb calcium. And it's common sense. And so you develop these vitamin deficiencies. So celiac disease is when the shags wear down. Now, what we know about the blood test, specifically transglutaminase, which is one of the tests, the blood test for celiac disease, and gliadins, which is one of the proteins in wheat. What we know about these blood tests is that the transglutaminase blood test is very, very accurate. All of the papers are right on the money, showing 97%, 98% accurate, 100% accurate. They all show that. Or celiac disease. Now, what's celiac disease? Celiac disease is when your shags wear down completely and you've got berber. And so all the people they tested had had the test done called an endoscopy, where they stick a tube down your throat and they look at your intestines, they snip a little piece of the material and they look at it under a microscope and they see the shags are worn down. That's celiac disease. Everyone they tested who had celiac disease, they did the blood test on every one of them, or the 98% of them, mm-hmm. the transglutaminase antibodies were high. And that made it obvious. Okay, this is a really good test to look for celiac disease. The problem is,
people use it for everything.
That's exactly right. That right. If your shags are only partially worn down, or if you just have the inflammation causing the lack of absorption, malabsorption, you don't absorb your vitamins and minerals, if you just have the inflammation and the shags haven't worn down yet, the blood test can be wrong up to 7 out of 10 times and say that everything's okay. It gives what's called a false negative. And says, no, there's no problem here, and it's a false negative. So you do not get false negatives if your shags are worn down completely.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the end stage of the disease.
Right.
By then, it's really bad. It's far mm-hmm. along, really, really bad. Now, blood tests came out about a year ago. That 2 years ago, that have changed the face of this now, completely changed the face of it. So let me give you a little background information. Proteins, which is gluten is a protein. Proteins are made up of amino acids, lots of amino acids. Think of it like a brick wall. If you look at a brick wall, all the bricks look the same. All the amino acids look the same in a protein to the eye. Digestion is breaking down the brick wall by taking the mortar off in between the bricks. And then you've got each individual brick, each individual amino acid. And the body absorbs those amino acids, and then we make new muscle cells, new bone cells, new liver cells, new kidney cells from the amino acids. The problem with gluten is that the human digestive system can't break it down. We can't get the mortar off the bricks. So instead, it's like someone took a sledgehammer and broke the brick wall into big pieces, a 33-brick piece, a 17-brick piece, a 9-brick piece, these big clumps of amino acids. They're called peptides. And the blood test that every lab uses to look for an allergy to gluten looks at a 33-brick piece called alpha-gliadin. Every lab looks for that brick. Or that clump of bricks. Now, what do we know about that? We know that 50% of celiacs have increased antibodies to alpha-gliadin, but the other 50% don't. They've got antibodies to other clumps of brick, not just the 33-clump brick. Well, why is it that the labs only look at the 33? No one really knows why that is, but not any longer. Now there's a lab that looks at 10 different clumps of brick from the protein called gluten. So you don't get the false negatives anymore. It looks at the 33 brick, but it looks at 9 others also. And you don't get the false negatives. So people can finally find out for themselves, do I have a problem with gluten or not, and get an accurate answer.
How accurate is it then?
Extremely accurate. Extremely accurate. The laboratory does each test twice to make sure of the sensitivity, that they're right on the money.
And the name of the lab is?
Cyrex Labs, C-Y-R-E-X, CyrexLabs.com.
And can people do this test themselves, or do they need to do it through a doctor?
They need to do it through a doctor.
Okay.
So they have to take this information to their doctor, and they can go to the website and look up the information, and the doctor just signs up with the lab to open an account, and the laboratory sends the doctor the test kits, and doctor draws the blood and sends it back to the lab, and boom, it's done.
So then you get a report that has all these 10 different peptide clumps, and it says you're sensitive to this one or not sensitive. So if you're sensitive to any of them, it means you're sensitive to gluten, period.
Correct.
Right?
That is absolutely correct.
I mean, 1 out of 10 is a bullseye.
That's all you need, because every other lab only looks at one. Now, if that came back positive, that's a bullseye in itself.
Right.
From any other lab. But now, Cyrex Labs.
Except that most of the time it's not. Most of the time it's coming back negative.
Well, 50% of the time for celiacs it comes back negative.
Right.
Yeah. And then for gluten sensitivity, we don't know. No one's ever known. But now we're able to tell how many times was the old test coming back negative. And I've had, gosh, I just talked to a doctor yesterday who their patient had done a regular test for celiac. It came back negative. They did the Cyrex test, and it came back positive to 6 different clumps of brick.
Just not and that particular one in the...
That's exactly right. Right. And Cyrex, that 33 brick, came back negative just like it did in the other lab. It was negative.
Mm-hmm.
That person's body was not reacting to that clump of brick. It was reacting to other clumps of brick from gluten.
Uh-huh. We had a caller that wanted to know the connection between celiac and autoimmune disorders. I know that's a huge question, but you want to just give it a brief little summary?
Oh, you bet.
Okay.
That actually is the reason that I got into this entire world. And so to your caller who asked that question, thank you very much, because that's why I got into the world of gluten sensitivity and celiac disease, because autoimmune diseases have been known to be the number 3 cause of getting sick and the number 3 cause of dying in the industrialized world. Number 3 behind cardiovascular disease and cancer. It's very, very common. Very common. Now we know that cardiovascular disease begins as an autoimmune disease against the blood vessels. And that's the earliest stages of when you start getting hardening of the arteries. It's an autoimmune process. So if you take that in mind, now autoimmune diseases and autoimmune conditions become the number 1 cause of getting sick and mortality in the industrialized world. That's how important this is. The concept I'm about to give you is a critical concept for your listeners who want to be healthy and stop the progression of whatever vulnerabilities they have, whatever diseases they're vulnerable to. This is a critical concept. Autoimmune diseases are 10 times more common in celiacs than in the general population. 10 times more common.
Whoa.
Yeah. And now, why is that? Papers started coming out in 2005, and there have been a number of them since then, that show that the development of autoimmune conditions requires 3 things. First, you have to have the genetic vulnerability. Second, you have to have an environmental trigger that sets it off, kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back.
Mm-hmm.
And a very common one is gluten. In our food chain, we eat it multiple times a day, every day. And the third is that you have to have intestinal permeability. The slang term for that is leaky gut.
Mm-hmm.
So now we know that you can arrest, and some of the research papers actually use the term arrest the development of autoimmune diseases by healing the intestines and getting rid of the environmental triggers.
Okay, go ahead.
Gluten is a most common environmental trigger, most common. So the whole reason to be concerned about gluten for those that don't get really sick when they eat it, and they say, I'm fine. So if I have a little sensitivity, so what? No. Because it can be the trigger that sets you off for an autoimmune condition. And depending on where your weak link is, you know, you pull at a chain, it always breaks at the weakest link. It's at one end, the middle, the other end, your heart, your brain, your kidneys, your liver.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever your weak link is, that's where you're going to get the tissue damage and the symptoms of an autoimmune condition. That's where you're going to show it. So the longer you throw gasoline on the fire, because it's all in inflammation. Mm-hmm. The longer you eat gluten, if you're sensitive to gluten, throwing gasoline in the fire, the bigger the bonfire, the more damage to your cells, and all of a sudden one day you're diagnosed with lupus, or you're diagnosed with Alzheimer's, or you're diagnosed with hepatitis, or you're diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis, or you're diagnosed with psoriasis. And the trigger often is because of a gluten sensitivity causing it all. Get gluten out of the diet, and you often arrest or reverse these autoimmune conditions. We've had many patients whose thyroid antibodies go away, whose rheumatoid antibodies go away, whose lupus antibodies go away, who've had multiple miscarriages because they have antibodies that's called the antiphospholipid syndrome. Those antibodies go away, and they have healthy babies. We see this time and time and time again. That's why this is so important, and that's why this world of gluten sensitivity will not go away. It's going to become more and more prevalent because the research keeps coming out showing all of the different ways this may manifest in your body.
In our last couple of minutes, a minute and a half, let's talk about, aside from taking gluten out, which means wheat, barley, and rye, what else can people do to help with their guts working better? Just a brief overview.
Critical to heal the gut. Critical. And there are many, many things to take to do that. And there is a protocol that's been put together. Nobody's going to open 6 or 8 bottles a day and take vitamins, the different things that you really need to take. You'll do it for a while when you're scared, but then you'll forget after a while and you won't do it.
True.
So we put together a pack. They're called gluten sensitivity packs. And there's 6 pills in there. You take one pack a day. You take one pack a day, and then you also take some extra probiotics, and it will help to heal the gut as long as you stop throwing gasoline in the fire.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so the pack has probiotics. What else does it have in it?
It's fish oils and glutamine and vitamin D and broccolinase and anti-inflammatories, curcumin, turmeric. There's 26 different nutrients in these packs, and they're available. You can go to thedr.com, thedoctor.com, and just look at the gluten sensitivity packs. You take one pack a day, and it takes 3 to 6 months. And as long as you're not throwing gasoline on the fire anymore, you should heal the gut. That should help a tremendous amount to heal the gut.
That is awesome. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. This has been a lot of fun. A lot of information. We'll have to have you back again, maybe in about 6 months. Does that sound good?
Well, thank you, and it would be a pleasure to come back.
Okay, thanks a lot. And you have been listening to Your Health.
I'm Ann Goldine.